Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and today we're going to be talking with my good friend and colleague and somebody that's really provided a lot of great insight for internet marketers all over the world, and that would be Dr. Glenn Livingston. Glenn, are you there?
I sure am. I used to say, this is something that I'm different about than I used to be. I used to feel like I researched the market so well and I built such a segmented sales system and such a relentless follow-up system that anybody would be crazy to come into a market with me. But as the years went by, I got a little more humble, and I had people come in, and as I was just kind of blatantly bragging about my markets, I had them come in and overtake them, and I found myself, it really wasn't a smart thing, Ken, to go into 17 markets. It was great for developing a formula. It was great for doing a lot of tests. It's not a really good business model to manage 17 markets. In fact, I go as far as saying it was insane.
Join the club, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
It's the kid in the candy shop phenomenon, you know? It's like, you know, when you're a kid, candy is parceled out very, you know, sparingly. And then one day, you know, when you learn some of these methods, all of a sudden you're in the candy shop. And you're like, wow, let me get some of this and put that in that pocket and stuff my mouth with that and put some of this in that pocket. You know, you can't help yourself sometimes.
Like that guy who says that I never got over the fact that I don't have to go to school anymore. I don't know. Yeah. So, I mean, that was a big drag on me. And it, you know, if you look at my site and you see an income graph, I went from zero to $28,000 very quickly, and the graph goes straight up. What you don't see on this site is that it kind of stops there and gets stuck for a year or two, because it was because of all those competing markets. 17 was my limit, and at that point I had to pick a couple and try to work on back ends, and all of a sudden I found myself, you know, I had this delusional idea that just knowing how to make things sell was enough to grow a business around you. And you know what? I was wrong. You have to know how to pick partners. You have to know how to negotiate. You have to know how to manage people. You have to know how to deal with lawyers. You have to know how to deal with the FTC. You have to know how to deal with customer service and, you know, other vendors and taxes. And I mean, it's just on and on and on and on and on. And not only was I so bright as to have 17 different markets, but I had 11 different corporations. And it was just a nightmare for years on end. So I try to spare people from making that same mistake and getting infected with marketingitis like it sounds like you and I have both had. And, you know, but part of my whole choose your market system that evolved over the years, and which I just re-recorded in the last couple of months, is designed to try and help people pick the right market the first time so they don't have to repeat my mistakes.
Amen. I think that's what a lot of us are doing. Whatever mistakes we've made or whatever unnecessarily hard roads that we had, we're trying to sort of smooth those away so people can get to it quicker. But, you know, you talk about having 17 different markets. That was actually a model that was advocated in the early part of this decade. There were a lot of people going around telling people, hey, you know, it's best to have lots and lots of little projects and they all add up to one big business. And it just doesn't work that way. You know, you're better off taking something. Well, I'll give you an example that really struck me. And I heard this long time ago. And I don't remember, I don't know how many people know who Ross Perot is, but.
Thank God I don't feel so old anymore.
Yeah, well, he's an interesting guy. You know, he worked for IBM, and as IBM does to all its top salesmen, one day it called him in and said, hey, thank you very much. We're going to cut your territory in half and give you the bad half. And, you know, hopefully you'll develop that bad half as well as you did the full territory. Corporate America at its best, you know. And so he said, well, hey, thanks. Screw you. And he started, I think, EDS is what it's called. And became a multi-billionaire. And then he ran for president way back when, and it was a very interesting race. And, you know, he's actually, come to think of it, he was right about a whole lot of things. Those of us old enough to remember his campaign speeches, he was kind of warning us about a lot of the stuff that we're dead in the middle of right now. So maybe he wasn't such a character after all. But anyway, because there was so much attention on him at the time, a lot of people were being interviewed. What was it like working with Ross Perot? What was it like dealing with Ross Perot? And there was this one guy that told a fascinating story. He had come to Perot with a business idea that he thought was great. And he had a great track record, and there was absolutely no reason why the guy couldn't execute on this idea. So Perot gave him the time for the pitch, and they talked some more, and it came out that this guy was not only involved in this business, but he had a couple of other ones going too. At which point Perot said, well, okay, that's the end of this interview. Good luck with what you're doing, but there's no way I'm going to work with you. And the guy was really shocked and even, I think, offended. And Perot said, look, you know, it's one business at a time, please. You know, there's no possible, in my estimation, you could ever make this business do everything it could possibly do, given that your attention is divided among a bunch of different ventures. And that really, not that I took advantage of that wisdom back then or even in the years following, but now that I'm getting a little, hopefully a little wiser, I'm really starting to understand why Perot was so emphatic about this issue.
One of the hardest things about being a successful entrepreneur is that the opportunities that come at you get better and more numerous. And like, if you think it requires discipline early on, you know, wait for what you're in for. And the more advanced marketers I talk to, I don't know that I found anybody who's been able to say, yes, I've been as disciplined as I really need to be. Ken, I'm sorry to interrupt. Did you want to say something else? Because I had one other thing to say about that.
Oh no, not at all. I love where you're going with that. It's an unfun word, but it is a word that leads to success and fulfillment and good feelings and accomplishment. That word is discipline, and we're all challenged by it. By the way, don't think that there's this group on Mount Olympus that, you know, is utterly disciplined and we're doing everything right. Believe me, we're all very aware that we're not doing everything as well as we'd like, and it usually boils down to the issue of discipline.
So here's something to keep in mind about whenever you hear someone talking about a quick and easy business model where you're going to scoop up a lot of mini profits and a multitude of businesses by repeating a process over and over again. That worked for a little while in an emerging media. When pay-per-click was fairly new to the scene and you could get very inexpensive clicks, it was possible to set up a profitable income stream selling a guinea pig book, you know, with a month or so of hard work, make $1,000 a month profit and then move on to do one on rabbits and move on to do one on, you know, wastewater management or something else. It was possible to do that back then. But as the media matures, the price of the media becomes more and more expensive, and you're then stuck with a business where it's very difficult to develop a strong visitor value to make the most out of every visitor that comes to you. And that's really what you want to be able to do to make the game work. I've got a friend, Bill Harrison, who says business is about turning the wheel, it's not about inventing the wheel. He tells me that his business works because he can sell his customers so many different products and services, and he's really engineered the economics of his business, this is a Dan Kennedy term, to make more than everybody else on a particular lead or visitor. And you really need to be able to do that, and the only place you're going to be able to make a profit if you don't do that is in the emerging media, by buying traffic ultra cheap. And so unless you want your business to be the profession of finding ultra-cheap media and, you know, chasing one form of media after the next, and, you know, I mean, if that's really what you enjoy doing, that's possible. I mean, you know, video traffic is now emerging as a relatively inexpensive media, and for the next 2 or 3 years you can probably build some of those income streams before the competition really heats up and you know, God knows what's going to come after that. But to me, it seems like I don't want the anxiety of not being able to handle the competition. Like, it's a natural phenomena that the cost of any media rises as people find out about it. It's just, that's a natural phenomena. And I want to be able to dig in when it's cheap, sure, but I want to dig in hard, and I want to make more money than anybody else in that market from that media, so that, you know, when it hits its natural peak, and there, you know, there is a peak in most media, because at some point other media become less expensive, and, you know, people say, well, I'll get the traffic a different way then. But I want to be able to ride it out, and I want to be the, I want to be the guy left standing when the prices of the media get to that peak. I don't want to have 17 different markets that get swamped, you know, by the price when everything goes above that. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. You know, it's strangely, a lot of business can be explained with warfare models. You know, not that business, I don't think business is war, you know, they're different things. But if you think of in war, you know, you kind of want to have a very well fortified base. You don't want to have 17 poorly fortified bases that are, you know, cut off from supplies and way out in the boondocks and hard to, you know, defend. I mean, that's sort of a recipe for disaster. And so, you know, the same thing applies to business and marketing. I, who is it, Andrew Carnegie? There's someone, you know, Zill is saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket or something like that. And Andrew Carnegie, who's the great steel magnate and the guy that funded supposedly many of the public libraries in America and that supposedly did a lot of other good things. He said, no. Do put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket very carefully. He may have been on something. Oh, really?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Put all your eggs in one basket
and build a fort around it.
Yeah. Well, and you know what Warren Buffett said, and I only came across this about a year ago, and I'm surprised I had never heard it before. He said, well, when I invest in a business, I'm looking for a castle on a hill surrounded by a moat. Now, a castle, for those of you that have never seen one and only know it through Disney, castle is really a fancy word for a fortress. So what we really should say is, I'm looking for a fortress on a hill surrounded by a moat. In other words, Buffett is looking for businesses that have done exactly what Glenn just describes. They had their opportunity. They had their open field. They dug in, and they grabbed as much of the market as they possibly could when it was easy, all the while improving their monetization so that they could afford to be the dominant media buyer and media controller, really, for that niche, so that other people couldn't get in as easily. And this is a much better tactic than saying, hey, here's, 18, 18, 20, 35 different little income streams I could be creating. You know, multiple streams of income. Now, hey, I'm going to dabble in real estate. I'm going to dabble in stock market trading. I'm going to dabble in internet marketing. I can't think of a better formula for total economic disaster.
Right.
You know, if you now on the other hand, if you're looking for multiple income streams, best within an existing business.
Yeah.
To say, okay, I'm selling them the coffee mug. Maybe I could sell them the T-shirt too.
But my friend David Oliver says that you want to be the Home Depot in your market. You know, you want to be able to walk into your store, have phenomenal customer service, and find everything they need for that one particular market area. And that makes the most sense to me.
Exactly. And that's something you're not going to be able to do if you're tending to 17 different flocks.
Absolutely not. Hey, could I ask you a question, Ken?
Yeah.
It's about the war metaphor, because it's something that I've been thinking about lately. You know, I'm a psychologist, right? And I never envisioned I was going to be this business person or trying to, develop an eight-figure business and, fight it out with the big boys and everything like that. And so, as I'm watching the culture at RocketClicks develop and kind of thinking about how do I want the cultures in my other companies to develop? At RocketClick, Jeff always says to people, eat what you grow, meaning you'll be compensated for, he says, eat what you kill. Eat what you kill. You'll be compensated for the territory that you conquer, for the for the moose that you hunt down and bring home. And Rob and I are like somewhat softer people who say, well, no, eat what you grow. You know, let's all be farmers and cooperate and use sustainable agriculture.
Compost.
Yeah, I guess I just kind of wonder, am I being idealistic? Am I being, because I don't want to live in a world filled with war where I have to, I think of myself as forging win-win relationships, but at the same time, I'm cognizant about the fact that everybody that I know who's got an eight-figure business, they study Napoleon and Alexander, and they use all of these military analogies, and they're constantly thinking about fortifying their base, and I'm just kind of wondering what your opinion about that is.
For some reason, I don't know how many people have seen the movie The Seven Samurai, which was adapted into an American version, The Magnificent Seven. And if not, they're both very entertaining movies. They're very different. You know, The Magnificent Seven is very Hollywood. You know, it's color and it's out west, and The Seven Samurai is sort of an art film, black and white, but very intense, and also worth watching. And it's the same story. It's just the Japanese version was first, and the American version came after. And it's basically these farmers that spend their lives growing rice, and they're very happy, and everything's great. And then the brigands, you know, the bandits show up, you know, who've grown nothing, who've done nothing, but they've got, you know, fast horses and bows and arrows and lances and so on, and they start pushing the little farmers around. And then these out-of-work samurai happen to show up in town the same day, you know, by coincidence, cinematic coincidence, and say, hey, we're going to help you. You know, we don't want you, a lot of things happen for them to come to that conclusion, but they decide that they're going to use their warlike abilities to protect these farmers. And they win, thank God. The good guys triumph, and the unemployed samurai kick the butts of the bandits, and the village, you know, survives. But also the village learns to stand on its own two feet, because it was not enough just for these seven samurai. It wasn't enough for them to fight the bandits. It just wasn't enough of them. So they had to teach the farmers how to fortify the fields or the village, and, you know, how to set up booby traps and how to use basic weapons and so on. And I guess it's a sad fact of life.
Yeah.
That if you build something, you know, what do they say? If you build it, they will come. And I guess it may not be true that if you build it, customers will come. But if you build a successful business, people that want to, you know, take advantage of your hard work will definitely show up.
Right.
It's funny. I was listening to an interview that I did 5 years ago. It's amazing, with a guy named Don Leiby. He's a brilliant man in so many different ways. But one of the things that he does is he's an investment banker for the mail order industry, and he basically assists in the buying and selling of pretty significant mail order businesses. He knows the numbers, he knows how to rationally improve a mail order business as opposed to, you know, juice the numbers and ruin the business in the process. He knows how to improve numbers and improve the business at the same time. Anyway, he was talking about the internet gnats. And what the internet gnats are, he says, you'll have a business that's online doing pretty good, and then you'll have these little companies that will come along and just chip away at one little piece of the catalog business.
Right.
And, you know, they may only take 0.25% of the sales, and you don't really notice them. And then then another one comes up, and another one comes up. And next thing you know, there's, you know, in the aggregate, there's like 80 little gnats, you know, chewing away at, you know, what used to be 30% of your market share. So, yeah, I think, we're talking Japan a lot. And interesting enough, Don is a Japanophile himself. And there's an old Japanese saying which I found incredibly useful, which is what you grow, by the sweat of your brow. You must sell by the sweat of your brow. And then I think the third line, which I'll add, is you then must defend the profits by the sweat of your brow too.
Right.
And I guess welcome to 3D, you know, meat space, for lack of a better word, you know.
Very satisfying and realistic answer.
Yeah.
Time for me to grow up. I agree.
Yeah, you know. Hey, you know, we've had a good run here on this call. I think we've shared a lot of really good stuff, and I want to talk about how people can follow up with you. And just, I think, you know, who follows Glenn? Well, I follow Glenn. Jonathan Mizell follows Glenn. Perry Marshall follows Glenn. Howie Jacobson follows Glenn. And if you ever talk to anybody that's really serious about internet marketing, they're all really aware of how Glenn does what he does and are always interested in what he's up to. So if you want to follow
Glenn. By the way, can I just want to mention one thing real quick? People always ask me, how do they get proof without testimonials? And I actually wrote a blog post. The title of the blog post was Michael Fortin Reads My Blog. I never met him. I never asked him for a testimony. I don't know if he bought my products at all. But just by saying, hey, Michael Fortin reads my blog, I get people a lot more interested in hearing what I have to say. And there's actually over 30 forms of proof you can use besides testimonials. So I know that newbies get all caught up in you know, how do I prove my case when I haven't sold my product yet? But that's a whole other conversation. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Oh, no, gotcha. I love that. So if you want to follow Glenn along with the rest of us, you can go to the researchsystem.com. That's the researchsystem.com. And that's a very easy way to follow what Glenn's working at. So Glenn, thank you so much for your time today. We got into a lot of really interesting stuff. And thank you for what you do for our industry, because nobody has dug deeper into the question of how to research online opportunities, as far as I know, and also sharing that message that it's not just finding the lucrative market; it's finding a lucrative market and knowing what form of a solution that market actually wants, and then making sure that you actually are ready, willing, able, and happy to do what it takes to provide that thing, whatever it is, for that particular market. And then this other issue, which we're all learning. Which is to dig in deep and, you know, stake some ground and serve people, and then also sort of protect your winnings, which is, you know, we're all learning. And I hope if nothing else from this call, and there's definitely a lot to review and to take advantage of, but if nothing else from this call, I hope it gives people insight that those of us seemingly at the top of things are studying just as hard and, you know, encountering just as many challenges that we've got to work through. And maybe the ultimate skill that we're all trying to develop is the ability to just, you know, deal with whatever is in front of us as effectively as possible, whatever that may be. And that challenge never goes away. It's, you know, do you rise to the occasion? So to get the benefit of Glenn's ongoing wisdom, theresearchsystem.com. And just for everybody who is interested in the system seminar, we are going to be in New York City this year, April 15th through 17th. And one way to get information about that would be to go to thesystemseminar.com/last. So Glenn, thank you again for the time, and we certainly have a lot more to talk about in the future, but for now we'll table the discussion for a future date.
Thanks, Ken.
Okay.
Be well.